Okay, this week's Sedra begins with the Parsha of Paraduma. Paraduma is the red heifer, which you burn with some other ingredients, and the ashes you put on some spring water in a vessel, and that purifies someone who became impure from coming in contact with the dead. It also has a very strange aspect about it, that the people who are involved in preparing it and actually putting it on the person who is impure, they themselves become impure minimally, and the person who is impure intensely becomes pure. So it's something that has strange properties, that it makes one person pure and another person impure. So this is the classical chok, right? The chok is something super rational. It's beyond rationale. There's no rational understanding of this. And therefore, the Torah starts, Zos chukas haTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. It represents not only this law, but in general, all the laws of the Torah are beyond rationale, even though there are ideas that we can understand about them. Okay. There's one big problem, though. This parsha was not given at this time. This was the end of the 40 years. It was given way before, in the second year from the when they went out of Egypt, on the when the Mishkan was dedicated. So why is it put over here? So Chazal say that the Rabbanu Shalom wanted this parsha to be right next to the death of Miriam, to tell me that just like the Parah Aduma atones, so too does the death of Tzadikim atone. Okay. Now, that's a little bit difficult, because the Parah Aduma doesn't atone for anything. The Parah Aduma is something that purifies, doesn't atone, l'chora, for any sins. Secondly, the death of Tzadikim is a punishment, not an atonement. It says that after the Rabbanu Shalom said 98 terrible tragedies and calamities that would befall the Jewish people if we don't keep the Torah, it said there's also other calamities that aren't even written here. And Chazal say those calamities are the taking away of tzaddikim. That's a greater punishment than all the other punishments that are mentioned. So you see, when the Rabbanu Shalom takes away tzaddikim, it's a punishment, not an atonement. Therefore, I want to explain the following. Even though Parah Aduma is predominantly for purification, okay, however, the Torah calls it a chatos, a sin offering. It refers to it as a chatos. Why? Because it has an element of atonement for the sin of the golden calf. The sin of the golden calf was the Jewish people took a calf that they wanted to manipulate the powers of that calf, almost like idolatry. And Chazal say that when you have a child that dirties, goes to a party and throws up or whatever, who do you call to clean it up? The mother. So here too, you get the mother, the red heifer. Red is a symbol of gold. Gold is has a reddish hue. You get the red heifer, the mother, to come and clean up what the child messed up. So it has a certain idea of atonement for the sin of the golden calf, which is related to death, because it says when the Torah was given, they were free from the Malach HaMavis. They wouldn't have died as we normally know death as it is now. Just like before the sin of Adam and Chava, there was not going to be any death as we know it. People would have graduated to the next level into the world to come. They wouldn't have died, where their body and soul are separated. But because of the sin of Adam and Chava, there had to be death in the world. When the Torah was given, had they not served the golden calf, they would have reverted back to the way that it was before the sin of Adam and Chava. But because of the golden calf, it reverted back to the idea of death. So death, to a certain degree, is a result of the sin of the golden calf. So the fact that it purifies from death and atones for the sin of the golden calf really go hand in hand. Now, the basic idea of a chok is that people understand that they can't understand everything in this world, and they can't control everything in this world, and they are required to bow, there's a better word, to subjugate themselves, subordinate themselves to God's will. That is the idea of a chok. Don't think that you can understand everything, and don't think you can control everything. God created, the word chok really means a framework. God created a framework. Whether you understand it or not, whether you think you can control it or not, right, you are bound to that framework. It's like the laws of nature, right? You can't say, well, I didn't know the law, so it shouldn't affect me. If you jump off a building, you say, well, I don't know about the law of gravity. Not going to help, right? Or, I don't accept that law. I don't understand it, therefore it shouldn't hurt me. No, whether you understand it or not, right, that is a law of nature. It's going to have an effect, and you can't do anything about it. Those are the laws of the Torah, too. They're laws of nature. They are a framework which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and whether you understand it or not, right, whether you like it or not, you can't control it. You are bound to that framework. Okay. The Chet HaEgel was the opposite. The Chet HaEgel was, we don't want to subordinate ourselves to God. We want to have an intermediary which we can manipulate and control, and we want to be in control of our own destiny. We're going to create a golden calf, and that's going to be like technology to be able to control our own destiny. We will then manipulate this calf. You're making us a power. Right? We're going to now wield that power to control our destiny. And therefore, the idea of bringing the mother is the idea of saying that that's not the case. You have to subordinate yourself to God's will, whether you understand it or not, and deal directly with God, not try to manipulate powers in this world. And the same thing goes when tzaddikim die, right? When tzaddikim die, true, it is a terrible punishment that we don't have those tzaddikim to guide us. But you have to accept the fact that it's God's will, and even if you don't have these powers to lead you, you have to subordinate yourself to God. So it's basically the same idea. Now, why, in addition to the fact that the Torah put this parsha, which doesn't belong here, in order to be right before the parsha of the death of Miriam, to tell me that there's a connection between Parah Aduma and the death of Tzaddikim, I think it goes beyond that. If you look at this Sedra has a lot of very problematic, questionable, what's a good word that's better than all of those, troubling things. First, Miriam dies. Now, we have at least a sin of Moshe and Aaron, why they died before they went into Eretz Yisrael. By Miriam, she didn't do any sin. Wouldn't it be nice to let Miriam go into Eretz Yisrael?
Why is there a sin?
Why
is it a sin to die? You
think no, it's not a sin to die. No, it's not a sin. But Miriam, you know, has been in the desert for 40 years. Such a big tzaddikus. Don't you think it would be nice to let her go into Eretz Yisrael? Why couldn't Miriam go into Eretz Yisrael? She didn't sin by anything, right? Why was she... She wasn't punished. Her time came. But wouldn't it be nice if God had extended her life and let her enter Eretz Yisrael? When we're not even told the reason why. Why did Miriam die then and not live to go into Eretz Yisrael? Very troubling. And then Moshe and Aaron, who sinned by hitting the rock, not speaking to the rock, a million other things, not very clear what they did. And here these people, Moser Nefesh, took them out of Egypt, suffered with them for 40 years, and all of a sudden they're punished, they can't go into Eretz Israel. Very beyond rationale. It's not really understandable. And then comes the, what's it called, Aaron dies in this week's Sedra. Miriam dies, Aaron dies. Very perplexing, right, and troubling. And then, what's it called, comes another attack by Amalek. And not only that, they take a hostage, Amalek. And we have to fight against them and get the hostage back, which is very relevant even till today. And then, what's it called, they beg our brothers, right, B'nai Esav, right, Esav's children, the nation, to let us go through their land. to make it easier. No, they won't let us go. Right? They came out with a sword. Right? Stay out of here. Same thing with Ammon. We're ready to go into Eretz Israel with all these miracles God did, and now the people don't even let us go through their land. And relatives, right? Our own brothers, Esav. And finally, the wars of Sichar and Og. All of this is the preface to going into Eretz Israel. We're on the border, ready to go in. And all these things happen, which are really perplexing. And therefore, the Torah put the parsha of Parah Aduma dafka here, in this sedra, because of all these perplexing things. Don't let it bother you that there are a lot of things in this world you don't understand. Why Moshe had to die, why Aaron had to die, why Miriam had to die, why all of a sudden Amalek is attacking us again, why we've been so successful, we're going in to conquer these seven nations, and our own brothers won't let us come through the land. Very perplexing things, right? And therefore, the Torah said, look, there's a lot of perplexing things in this world. Death is one of them. Death is something that people don't understand. Why some people die young, some people die old, people die in tragic ways, in peaceful ways, right? Death is something that troubles people, and that's why people need a nechama, right? You need to be comforted when somebody dies. And basically, it upsets a person's emunah and bitachon when somebody dies, right? They start to have questions on God, right? Questioning why did this happen or whatever. And it, to a certain degree, distances you from God. Therefore, you need the Parah Aduma to bring you back. Right? You can't go into the Beis HaMikdash when you're Tameh. You can't eat Korbanos. You're distanced from God. And the Parah Aduma helps to bring you back. How? Very simply. Because it tells you, you can't understand everything in this world. You have to subjugate your mind and to the Rabbanu Shalom. And I think some of the ingredients of the Parah Aduma represent that, right? First of all, the Parah Aduma itself comes to tell me that you have to negate that idea of the Chet HaEgel. What was the Chet HaEgel, like we said? You took something, created a power. Today, it could be any kind of technology, any kind of, what's it called, of something that you can control nature, right, with all the different kinds of machines and things that we have today, that people can basically control the powers of nature, and we want to be in control. We want to make it that we're the ones in control. Doesn't work. With everything you can do, you're still not in control. You're still not the ones who are controlling this world. So you take the mother of the ego, right, which represents its source, and you burn it to ashes. Get rid of that idea that you're in control over here, right? And therefore, you can't even understand everything that goes on in the world, and you have to accept that God is the one who creates situations. You don't create the situations, and God is the one who knows better, and you have to accept that he knows what he's doing, and he's doing what's right. Hold on. The second thing that there is also an idea that not only is it super rational, but sometimes it seems contradictory. This one it makes Tameh, and this one it makes Tahar, the same thing, right? Same thing with death. Sometimes you see good people suffer and they die, and wicked people prosper and they don't die. And it looks like the people who should be Tameh are Tahar, and the people who should be Tahar are Tameh, and it's very perplexing. Still, God knows what he's doing. You don't control this world. God controls it. He's the one who sets up the situations, knowing what the eternal picture is going to be. And therefore, you take also, what are some of the ingredients that go into this Efer of Parah Aduma? An Eitz Erez, a piece of cedar wood, which represents that sometimes people want to control everything because they think that they know best. They're very haughty. And they think that they can take God's place. They're gods in themselves. So we burn that cedar tree, burn that gaiva, that haughtiness. Sometimes people feel that they are the victim of circumstance. They're so lowly, and they're just a cog in a machine, and there's no reason and rhyme to anything, right? They don't want to control, but they just give up hope. Then they're like an azov, a little weed. Burn that too. To understand, it's not that you're just a cog in a machine and it's hopeless, but there's a God who runs the world, and what he's doing is for a purpose, and it's all for the good. So accept that. So don't be the cedar, and don't be the weed. And then we take also a shnitolas, Now, a shnita las is a piece of wool dyed red with the blood of a worm. I was thinking, what's the thing? It says that Jewish people are compared to a worm. Why? Because the worm's whole power is with its mouth. And our power is with our mouth, with prayer. But prayer can also be sometimes very perplexing. Because sometimes you daven and you daven and you daven and you're not answered. Or you're answered not the way you want to be answered. And sometimes people daven and they're answered. It says that one of the things that is a negative thing is iyun tefillah. There's two kinds of iyun tefillah. One, when you daven with kavana. That's very good. One is when you daven and you feel that you're in control. And because if you're davening, you're going to get the result you want to have no matter what. That is very, very negative. First of all, the idea that you're in control like that is not good. Secondly, it doesn't work like that. Sometimes the Rabbanu Shlom says, what you're davening for, my answer is no, because it's not good for you. Or that's not what's good for the world or whatever. And the answer is no. And if you are constantly davening and feel that you're surely going to be answered the way you want to, you're going to get heartache. So the Shni Tolas burned that too. Even the idea of tefillah. Don't feel you're in control. Tefillah is that the Rabbanu Shlom said you can daven. He wants you to daven. Davening has an effect. But never think that you're the one who's controlling the situation, even with davening. So that's a Shni Tolas. And you burn all these things.
You literally burn
them? Yeah, to ashes.
Uh-huh.
And then you take the ashes and you put them into water from a spring in a vessel. Meaning, accept the fact that there's a vessel, there is a framework that you have to function within. And what's in that framework is Torah. Torah is living water. And that's what life is all about. Take all these ideas, right, and subjugate them to Torah, which is God's will. Put them into that framework that God gave you, and that will purify the person who came in contact with the dead, who was concerned that he doesn't understand, that it upsets his belief and his faith. It'll set you back on the right path if you accept the fact there's a framework. That framework is basically filled with God's will and Torah, and all these other things, reduce them to ashes. Put them onto that Torah, and that will purify the situation.
Is that why Hashem has a...
Okay, hold the questions until we finish. And that's why, if a person doesn't do this to himself, somebody else sprinkles this concoction on the person to make him tahor. Because it's very hard for a person to comfort himself. Even when somebody dies, the person doesn't comfort himself. He has people come to comfort him. So you need other people to come to be mechazik you and whatever, who are not in the situation. From the outside, they can give you chizik. And what do they tell you? Hamokom yinachem eschem. It's not within this world for us to understand. It's beyond this world. God is not in the world. He is the place where the world exists. So God's beyond all of this, and he knows what he's doing. Within the world, it's hard to know what all this is all about. That's the idea. And that's the same thing, what's it called? The idea of the Misa of Tzadikim is also very perplexing, right? But it teaches us that God knows what he's doing, and obviously has a good purpose, and why he takes the Tzadikim out of this world. And that also takes away this idea of trying to feel that you're in control and you can understand everything. And therefore, as a preface to all these perplexing things that are mentioned in this Sedra, as we get ready to go into Eretz Yisrael, a lot of perplexing things happen. You need the Parsha Paraduma as a preface. Okay, interesting. In the end of the Sedra comes the following. The Torah is speaking about the following happening. There was a city called Cheshbon that was in the jurisdiction of Moab. And as the jurisdiction of Moab, we weren't allowed to conquer it. We weren't allowed to make war with Moab because they came from Lot, and we weren't allowed to conquer that city or take it to be ours. We had to leave it for Lot. But Sihon went and captured that city and conquered it. Then it became the land of Sihon, not Moab. So it became laundered. It no longer was Moab's property, it was Sichon's property. Sichon we could fight with. So we fought with Sichon, we took the city away from him. So they bring down that when Sichon conquered this city, people said, Bo Cheshbon, let's now go to the city of Cheshbon and build it up, because nobody wanted to build it up when it belonged to Moab, because they were always afraid that Sichon would conquer it and destroy it, so why build it up? But now that Sichon conquered it and it belongs to him, why not build it up? So they built up the city, only to be taken away by the Jewish people. So they got this built up city, right, without any putting any effort, because now we were allowed to conquer it, and before not. And before nobody wanted to build it up anyway, now they built it up because Sichon took it, and Mela, we got it, and a built up city. Okay, that's, so the Gemara says there is a homiletical meaning to this pasuk. Al-Kain Yomru HaMoshlim. Those people who rule over themselves, Moshlim B'Yitzram, who rule over their Yetzirah, they say the following, Bo Cheshbon, Bo V'Naseh Cheshbono Shel Olam. Let us make the accounting of the world. Schar Mitzvah K'neged Hefseda. Figure out the reward you get for a mitzvah opposite its loss, and the reward you get for an aveira opposite its loss. In other words, make the accounting. It's better to do mitzvahs even if you lose out, and it's better to do aveira. It's not good to do aveiras even if you'll benefit from them. That is the homiletical meaning, which I think has a very, very important lesson. And that is, the Sedra starts out, you can't control this world. You can't control the situations that come up. You can't even understand everything that happens in this world. So what can you control? Where are you emotional? Where are you in control? Where you're the ruler when it comes to your Yetzer Hara, when it comes to your choices of good and evil. You can't create and control situations that God controls. You can control how you react to them, how you function, what you choose to do. And therefore, what you're in control of is making the accounting of the world. There's an accounting that God makes. That's not your business. What you're accounting is, what's the accounting of this world? The accounting of ruling over yourself, ruling over your Yetzer Hara and Yetzer HaTov, choosing to do mitzvahs and choosing not to do aveiras. And this idea, in the past, I've said three or four different ideas about it. What is this cheshbono shel olam? Because the problem is, why don't you say, do mitzvahs and don't do aveiras? Why do I have to make an accounting? So one idea is that the Chafetz Chaim says, this accounting is the following. There are always short-term benefits from doing aveiras or not doing mitzvahs. You'll save money, time, you'll get pleasure. But the long-term, eternal results are never worth it. Because there's always much more damage eternally from doing an aveira than any benefit you could have short-term. And the same thing, there's always greater long-term, eternal reward than you could possibly lose out by spending money or time or effort or whatever on not doing a mitzvah. In doing a mitzvah. So therefore, that's what it comes to tell me. Don't look at the here and the now. The here and the now is very hard to see. There's an eternal picture. And that impacts on the first part. You can't understand what's going on because all you see is this world. And in this world, what you can be in control of and understand is your own personal mitzvahs and aveiras. That's it. The bigger plan, why God did this and why he did that, God knows the eternal plan. And since the mitzvah is to look at that, and you can't see that, you can only understand it when it comes to what you choose to do, good and bad, so trust that God knows the picture better than you, first thing. Second thing, right? From the time of Adam HaRishon and Chava, with the first sin, there's never been anything in this world that's totally good or totally bad. Everything's a mixture of good and bad. And your job is to make the accounting, what's the major thing? There's always good that has bad in it. So whatever mitzvah you're going to do, there's something negative. So understand that. And even though there's something negative, choose to do the mitzvah because the majority is positive. And minimize the negative. Same thing with Avera. There's always a benefit. There's always something good about a sin. But the majority is no good. So don't do the sin. Make that accounting that the majority here is no good. And that good, try to get some other way without doing the sin. Understand there is a benefit you could get from the sin. Try to get it in another way that's permissible. And that is also this whole idea, and one second, how do we learn that from? So first of all, what does that fit with the simple meaning of the sentence? That go and build the city of Cheshbon because Sichon took it. Again, if you look at the narrow here and now, right, Sichon capturing this city and enabling it to be built was good for him. But in the end, he was just a pawn in order that the Jewish people should take it over. So if you look at the bigger picture, there was a lot more going on here than we could see at each step. The second thing is that everything is a mixture. Every war is like that. Before you decide to go into battle, there is the ups and the downs, the what's it called, the positive side and the negative side. But once you decide to go into war, the benefit of the war has to outweigh the negatives. Because if the negatives outweigh the positive, what are you going to war for? What are you going to win? So you always have to make an accounting to decide, is it worth going into battle, knowing you're going to lose some lives, you're going to lose what's it called, money, whatever, is it worth the investment? If in the end, the final thing is worth it, it's worth it. That fits into this idea also, that in this world, you have to always take in consideration, what's the eternal benefit or detriment, as opposed to the immediate benefit or detriment. Then there's another idea. That is, Nase cheshbono shel olam, which means the following. Every mitzvah a person does, so he gets rewarded for it, and if you do an avera, you get punished. That's a personal thing. But there's a much bigger picture. And that is that if you wouldn't do this mitzvah, the world would suffer. Not just you. You wouldn't get rewarded. But the world needs your mitzvah. And it could be that every mitzvah could tip the scales in favor of keeping the world going. Because every avera could tip the scales the other way. So when you do a mitzvah, don't only look at your small individual part in this, but make cheshbono shel olam. Look at what the world, right? What is hefsid mitzvah keneged schara? Not the punishment that you'll get, whatever. What loss would incur to the world if you didn't do this mitzvah, as opposed just to what reward you're going to get for doing the mitzvah? When you do the mitzvah, don't just have in mind that you're getting rewarded. But imagine what the world would lose out if you didn't do this mitzvah. The bigger picture. Same thing with the Avera. Don't only look at the punishment you would get if you did this Avera, but what will the world lose if you did this Avera? What would the world lose out if you did this Avera? Not just what punishment you would get personally. So there's a bigger picture, and that is the same thing that helps you to understand that when it comes to other things in this world, not your own moral choices, but when it comes to what God does in the world, there's a bigger picture. And you don't see that bigger picture. So have faith and trust that God knows what He's doing. And therefore, I was thinking that just like before they finished their journey in the desert and were ready to come into Eretz Yisrael, we had all these perplexing things happen, and we needed to be strengthened to know that not everything in this world can we understand, and that we're not in control, and that is the lesson of Paraduma, like we said. And that's why it's put over here, because in this parasha a lot of perplexing things happen, right? The Miriam's death and Aaron's death and Moshe Rabbeinu's punishment not to come into Eretz Yisrael, and the war with Amalek and the hostage taking or whatever. Very difficult things. And it looked like now we're already finished, we're ready to come into Eretz Yisrael, and all these perplexing things are happening. It says that before Mashiach comes, we're going to go through a process just like they went through coming into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it says even there'll be a thing that the Jews will go back into the desert and have to come back, whether it means literally or not, back to those 42 stations coming back into Eretz Yisrael. Coming back into Eretz Yisrael is like what Mashiach is like, what's it called? Mashiach is like coming into Eretz Yisrael the first time. There's a parallel. If that's the case, then as things get closer and closer, we're up to the same kind of things. All these perplexing things. Things that happened, the Holocaust. 6 million Jews were killed, right? Things that happened that we don't understand. This tzaddik and that tzaddik is taken away. And the war with Amalek. We have so many enemies that come against us. And hostage taking too, right? It fits in with this, etc. All these things we don't understand. So we're going to need also the lesson of Paraduma to be able to strengthen our emunah and bitachon, to think, to know that we do not control the events in this world. We can't even understand them. Because we don't understand them, we can't control them, and we shouldn't want to control them, because who knows what we'll do that's wrong. God is in control, except for one thing. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyira shamayim. Everything's in God's control except one thing, our moral choices. That's where we're the moshlim. That's where we are the rulers. We can rule over ourselves, make the right accounting, and that is what's it called, that is the contrast between the beginning of the Sedra, what you can't understand, and what you can't control, and the end of the Seder, what you can understand and what you can control. You can't control the bigger picture, the bigger world. You can control your own personal little world of choices. That's what you can understand. Make an accounting and do it. That's the idea. Now, yeah.
As you were talking, Rabbi Lef, I was thinking about when things happen to you, or when things happen in the world, I remember hearing that there are lessons to be learned. And you have to look at what happens, and you have to try and say, what is Hashem telling me?
100%.
What is Hashem telling the world?
100%.
So where is the fine line, the balance between that and saying, I don't understand, I have to take everything on faith?
Because I'll give you an example. The Holocaust, okay? For anybody to say they know why the Holocaust happened, and therefore it happened because these people did this or that or whatever, which is ridiculous, right? And therefore, that I understand that. No, that's beyond our understanding. However, now that it happened, it affects me. What can I learn from this that can aid me in being a better person? So it's not that I'm saying, I understand why it happened, but I understand that it affected me. What can I learn from what affected me that will...
So what you're saying is that the question to ask, both of what's happening
right.
now
what can
and what
I,
happens
right.
in our lives, is what can I learn that
right,
I can
exactly.
use to be a better
not
person?
Not what can I come to the conclusion, this is why it happened. No. God made it happen. Wait, what does he want me to learn from it?
Okay.
Separate thing. Any other questions? Okay, I think I gave you something to think about. And it definitely is clearer to me than when I wrote it up. So, thank you.
The putative ashes on the chatan before the kapah, is that something?
No. That has nothing to do with that. That has to do with the remembrance of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It says that when a person has a time of happiness, they should remember the fact that we're still in Gaulis and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So to do that, they put... So today, some people have the custom not to do that because we break a glass to remember.
Right, I was just going
right.
to say that.
So therefore, the breaking of the glass took the place of that. Others hold, no, you need both things. So the minig is by us to put the ashes and also to break the glass. Yeah.
Okay, I have two questions. First off, you said that there's always good that has bad in it. But do you mean just on a personal level? Like
no.
the time, like time, like doing a mitzvah, trying to think of something. Like, say, doing Shuluch HaKam, right? Is there something really bad in that, or is it just that it's
no,
like
it's not bad. It's that there's always a mixture of positive and negative. In other words, nothing is 100% pure good in this world. There's been a mixture of bad and good. There's always something, for instance, a person does a mitzvah, right? He's never going to do it with 100% right kavanah. There's always going to be some little bit there that's not right. In this world is not a world of absolutes. Since the sin of Adam and Chava, good and bad became mixed together. So nothing's absolutely good or absolutely bad. There's always a little benefit from the bad and a little detriment from the good.
But
it's never perfect.
What would be the detriment? I'm trying to understand what that could be.
The detriment could be that you didn't have the right kavama, whatever. You didn't do it right, 100% the right way. You had a little bit, you took pride in the fact that you did it and bragged about it or whatever.
Oh, it's almost like a feeling in ourself, not in the mitzvah.
Right. No, not that the mitzvah is not perfect, but no mitzvah is ever done perfectly or an aveira done without some benefit coming from it.
Okay. And the other question, you mentioned about the Jews being compared to worms and that our power is in our mouth. Is that not the same with non-Jews too, that they have power in their words too, or is it just us?
Yes and no. Our power of prayer is special. That's the two things that make the Jewish people special, is that we have a Torah that guides every aspect of our life, which the Goyim don't have. They only have seven mitzvahs. And we have a special relationship with God that whenever we daven, he's there for us. Now, what he answers us is a different story, but he's always there for us. By a non-Jew, that guarantee is not there. Mm. They can daven. They should daven. But he doesn't have that same close relationship.